Recently released, Open Roads is published by Annapurna Interactive and developed by the Open Roads team. We got a chance to talk about this Caitlin Deaver and Carrie Russell fronted narrative game with some of the Open Roads team developers. Executive producer Amy Fincher, art director Noelle Clark, engineering lead Aaron Friedman, operations manager and associate producer Sarah Robertson, and graphic artist Harrison Gerard. In our time together, we discuss the story, what they hope audiences will take away from Open Roads as the developer, and the choice behind the game's use of 2D and 3D art styles, as well as capturing that perfect early aughts nostalgia. Our interview recording started a little bit after I asked the first question. For your context, I asked about how important it was to have a mother-daughter story at the center of Open Roads, and if that was the original idea. Keep on listening and enjoy the interview.
History with their mothers and grandmothers and things, so it was an interesting story to explore, for sure.
I feel like it's not a relationship you often see much in games, at least. Like, there's lots of Harrison's trying to get connected on. Yeah, I feel like, you know, you do see quite a bit more of whether it's father-son relationships or father-daughter relationships or mother and son. It just feels like it's oddly, as a relationship that I think so many people can have some sort of relationship to, oddly one that you don't see necessarily reflected in games and media in particular very often. So I think it once it sort of surfaced, is like, this could be something not only exciting to explore as, you know, individuals on the team, but I think sort of generally seeing that, like, there might be an interesting niche here that's kind of not, you know, hasn't maybe gotten filled as well as some of the other sort of familial bond relationships that you see played out in games.
Right. Something that happened as the story evolved was, you know, that element was already always there, was always important. My understanding is some of the early inspiration may have come from films like Lady Bird and things like that. But the story also had a lot of other stuff in it. And as we worked on it more, we really realized that was the thing that was most important to us, and made sure that everything about the story revolved around that relationship and served the, like, development of that relationship.
And we see the story a lot through dialogue, and it's fantastic, and it feels really authentic in how Tess and Opal kind of bounce back off of each other. But one of the things that really kind of, trying to figure the best words for it, but resonated with me was the art style choices. So when there's dialogue, it's illustrative. And when you're in first person view, the world is three dimensional and you're interacting with it. I wanted to know, how did you all kind of choose this art path, and how did you work at creating a tactile environment for players to immerse themselves in?
Take it away, Noelle.
Yeah, I think Noelle will have a good answer for this too. But I think, like, we really approached it from having a lot of variables in terms of, like, we knew we wanted to have that great illustrative style for the dialogue. We knew that we wanted to have, like, really realistic examinables, like photorealistic examinables. And then we, like, working from those two points, we kind of figured out, like, the best way to blend those together and have them live together. But I think, like, overall, like, the stuff me and Noelle talked a lot about were, like, having really good color palettes and making sure that, like, the color palette of the level was, like, really meshed together, like, every aspect. And having, like, a good amount of visual texture in the game as well, so it didn't feel, like, collaged. It felt more grounded, but I'd be interested to hear Noelle's take as well.
Yeah. It was kind of, I feel like the 2D versus 3D aspect of the game was decided on pretty early on, to explore at least. And at least from my perspective, I started out as an animator on the team and became the art director. But the, like, animating in 2D for characters was, like, a dream of mine for AIM games. And also, like, these characters are so important to the story, and they have really strong personalities. And I feel like 2D animation, like, creates more, it's like, you can create a lot of emotion through just a few frames. And so we felt like that would be a really good way to represent the characters, which, yeah, it was really fun.
I don't know what got me thinking about it like a lot today, but something that I you know, I think it underlines kind of one of those probably well understood concepts of like there's almost no decision you can make in game development where I think it's a completely isolated, very little thing on its own. It's like Noelle said, like early on, it was sort of like, this is something we should explore and let's see where it goes. And then that falls into, okay, well, we also want to make this a game where there's a lot of exploration and interaction with the world. Like, okay, so how do we balance that with, if we want 2D characters, do all the interactables have to be 2D then? Well, that seems a shame because it shuts down so much of the interaction with like the 3D things in the world. Do you represent the 3D things in a 2D form? Well, that's not necessarily as fulfilling in the way that we wanted, because it's, there's something fun about being able to like pick up the dog food can and rotate it around and look at like all of the details and the, you know, ingredient list on the back and all this sort of stuff we added. But then when you do have 2D items, then you have the opportunity for, now we can have a 2D character directly interact with that. Now we can have Tess's hand, your hand, like in the screen showing she's holding that photo. She's flipping it over. You know, she's got a bunch of matchbooks in her hand that she's fanning through. Like the sort of being able to have both styles and have fun finding those opportunities to, I think, highlight things in different ways by whether there's something you interact with via your kind of 2D existence or a 3D space was neat. And then you have unique things like in the car, you now have Opal as a 2D character driving a 3D car, having to touch it and realistically like look like she's interacting like with this whole 3D space. And I don't know, it's one of those like, I feel like it was a challenge set upon really early, and hopefully we ended up with a really interesting, unique kind of space for players to experience both.
Yeah, and that's a really good segue to the sort of gameplay side of it that I was going to mention, where I think what you're seeing in the final version of the game with the 2D assets is I think what we ended up like realizing were the strongest parts of that aspect of the visual design. And there's also a lot of elements that didn't end up in the game, which were kind of other experiments that we had with blending 2D and 3D modes. So I think it's just kind of like a good example of a lot of the game development and game design process is taking things out of the game, which we definitely did a lot of. So the game would have felt very different with some of these other ideas in there.
And when it comes to kind of telling the story and this family story, we see it in dialogue. We see it when you get the prompt to say, hey, mom, and like investigate the item a little bit more from a more personal standpoint. But we also see it just by like what's written on the postcards and what is written in birthday cards and on the backs of photos. Can you all talk a little bit about the narrative design, not necessarily through dialogue trees and options, but in the little pieces that you collect across, you know, each of the environments?
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to talk about it. That was really like my number one contribution to this game. So
perfect question for you.
Talk about it. Exactly. I think overall, we knew from the get-go that like in this genre of game, like Open Roads or other ones, right? Like Tacoma or Edith Finch or like any of these like walking simulator games, that's like a really crucial point, is like picking up like text and having it feel real and having a sense of like verisimilitude with it. So I think like the short and easy answer is like exactly that like we just wanted to make sure that everything felt very like real and something that you could actually find and didn't feel too like exposition-y. But at the same time, like I think it is really fun to like put those kind of Easter egg-y things around, and we like as a whole team talked a lot about like what certain objects should go in certain places, because I think that voyeur sense of like digging through someone's junk drawer is like such a crucial part of these games and what makes them fun, and allows us to really give a different lens on a character than you would ever get just from talking about them.
Yeah, another way that I like to think about it with those elements. And this is something that we definitely spend a lot of time discussing as a team, is that the, like, the elements that we're talking about here, where like, oh, it's all the extra stuff, it's stuff that isn't the dialogue, are the places where the player gets to interact with Tess on a more personal level, and kind of they can role play, they can be in conversation with her, kind of be in her head, be in the player's head, which is very different than the dialogue, which kind of serves as like the main plot kind of engine. So it's like a nice contrast, and a really fun place where gameplay can exist inside of a game like this.
Also, to continue the theme of talking about objects, because y'all blew that out the water, I did want to ask, how did, like, you all built out the early 2000s in such a real way. What were the pieces of the setting that you knew you had to get right to really push that time period for the player?
Well, I mean, maybe a kind of cop-out answer is we maybe got a bit lucky or fortunate with a lot of the people that contributed assets to the project that are not sort of in front of you. We're also, like, a lot of us are millennials, a lot of us are from that kind of time period. So I think there was like an inherent kind of like innate sense of just like, if we were to say early 2000s, it didn't seem like we had to work very hard for people to understand that aesthetic. But that's also like not right. A very great answer. It doesn't actually really tell you a whole
we
lot.
We had to do a lot more research on the other time periods that are represented, yeah. Because a lot of it was just like people just instinctively understood, like, because like, oh, I had that, or I remember that.
There was a lot of that, like, oh, it was just like a literally a thing that we had growing up.
Yeah,
I would say, like, from a purely graphic design perspective, like, the 2000 stuff was actually like the hardest to get reference for, just because like it's still recent enough that a lot of like material stuff wasn't documented. So like I dug up through a lot of like old eBay listings and stuff like that to try to find like, where do people take pictures of like a 2003 Coke can, you know, and like, where do you find examples of that design 20 years later? And especially when like so much of the 2000 stuff is like well regarded as ugly. I remember telling my graphic design teacher, like one of my old professors, that the game was set in 2003 and I was doing graphic design for it. And she was like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, what an ugly era. And like, obviously you learn to love it, but like, there's still a lot of it that's pretty eye searing. And we leaned into that, like, from the get go. We always wanted like so bad it's good kind of stuff.
Well, there's also the mine's real quick. Besides for the objects, we also had to do a lot of this in the sound design. And you know, what's on the radio? What does Tess have in her boombox? What kind of music that's not audible to the characters can we hear? And that was a really, really interesting problem to solve. I think that the car radio is probably where that shines the most, but it was really important for that to feel correct and for that to take you back to that time period.
I was just gonna say, I feel like I love that Aaron brought up that, you know, we definitely had the benefit of folks on the team who were, especially those who were around Tess's age in 2003, to be able to really like give it a realistic grounding of what it was like, rather than the sort of, you know, I literally just saw a meme the other day that was like, oh, so you were lived in the 80s, and they have like this crazy picture of like the neon and the things and the patterns. And it's like, no, I grew up in the 80s, like wood panel walls and like monochromatic. It's like you sort of have this, I think it's easy to try to, in an attempt to pursue like an aesthetic, to go into this sort of like fake version of it that is almost like the presentation of that era that maybe you'll see in like sitcoms or something, where the kid's bedroom is just, you know, so over the top in these items that are meant to be very like evocative and referential of the era. But in reality, very few kids would have actually had that room. That was like that set dressing. That's not what you would have actually had. And like Harrison said, having to keep in mind, you know, it's not as though her room can be full of things that were like brand new 2003. It's like, oh, some of that stuff she's had for years. That's an old bed that's in her grandmother's house. Like, it's trying to ground these things not all in one place, but also going back and saying, okay, maybe we're set dressing a place for the 60s. Well, that means they probably bought a lot of the furniture in years before that. So how do you kind of show that, like, it's a real lived in space, not just like a single splash catalog page of like everything's new and shiny.
Going off of that, one of the things that I found really compelling about the game is that there's this, like, one, it feels a little bit timeless until you see those moments. You're like, yeah, that's early 2000s. This fits, it hits. And nostalgia kind of hits a little bit when you're playing, especially as a millennial. But there was this balance between that little bit of nostalgia, including the songs on the radio, that blends to the player effortlessly into capturing these big emotional moments and these big emotional pieces as well. Did you all have to think about balancing maybe some of the nostalgia for your players and the time period itself against some of those emotional beats that the story has, or was it pretty easy to kind of separate the two or distinguish them? If that question made sense.
I mean, are you asking if there was a conflict between the big emotions of the story, yes, and the, like, the fun nostalgic elements?
Yes.
I mean, I would say no. I'd be curious what everybody else thinks, but to me those things work together really well because we were trying to establish kind of a tender and bittersweet tone, and nostalgia is such a huge part of that. Like, nostalgia isn't just like, oh, I remember that, I loved that, you know, Dr. Pepper flavored chapstick. It's also like, I'm not that child anymore. And, you know, there's that feeling of sadness to that as well. So it felt pretty harmonious to me. What did y'all think?
Yeah, I mean, I think kind of going back to the question that we started at with it being about Tess and Opal and their relationship, right? We have the advantage of not needing to tell a historical story, even though it's set in a particular time period. So that does kind of free us from kind of any constraint there. So, like, it's very timeless, like, is exactly the word that you used, even though ironically we are very much set in time.
Yeah, it's like the setting is specific, but the feelings are timeless.
And I think since we're approaching time, I think my last question is really, just what do you want people to take away from playing Open Roads? I know I had a very personal experience with it. Is there a specific thought, feeling, action that you all want somebody to, you know, once they finish the game, kind of walk away from it with?
Call your mom.
Yeah, I think I don't think the game has a call to action necessarily in terms of like it means this, but I think what we talked about a lot as a team is we want it to touch people and maybe hit a nerve a little bit and not necessarily be an exact reflection of their own experience, because this isn't a story about mothers and daughters. It's a story about a specific mother and a specific daughter. And we really wanted people to experience that and hopefully feel it and connect with those characters. And, you know, absolutely, if possible, to call your mom. We would love it if people did that too.
Yeah, I mean, my longer form, slightly less jokey answer is, yeah, like, of course, you know, as a form of, you know, media, entertainment, like a work of art, a work of craft, if we can have our players come out with, you know, the same kind of response and feeling that you're indicating, where, like, you know, you feel moved and touched in a personal way, I think that's all we can really ask for, right? Because, like, well, our greatest hope is that you, the players, can make the game, you know, your own experience. It's not about us kind of telling you how to feel about the thing that we made.
Totally agree.
I like that. I think everyone can probably find some way to relate to having, you know, family, friends, whatever it may be, you know, people in your life where maybe you didn't think to, you know, ever ask questions about kind of who they used to be, what they used to do, what they used to like. It's sort of, I think it's easy to get into a space of knowing someone as their relationship to you is kind of like, that's the primary beat of connection versus, yeah, your mom was a whole person before you came around with, you know, a whole different set of, you know, life experiences. And It'd be really, really fascinating if people feel compelled to like, hey, I never asked what grandpa used to do, or I never thought about what my great grand nephew, like niece, grandmother, whatever it may be. Like, it feels like there's so much interesting things you can kind of explore within that, or even just whether it's chosen family, like just it's a neat. I think it's not uncommon to find that like at the end, there's questions left unasked, and you're left putting pieces together of someone's life without them there. And if it motivates some people to go, hey, yeah, actually, I'd love to learn more about that, or dig more into it, or go through that box of stuff for my grandma in the attic and just see, like, I wonder what sort of story that tells. It's kind of cool if the game helps, motivate someone to do something like that.